Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers.
And I'm Bonnie North. Every so often, when he isn't off in California trying out this year's vintage, Ray Pfister stops in to chat with us about wine. Well, we managed to catch him just as he was about to head west again, and he had rosé on his mind.
I think people think of it as a summer wine, a warm temperature wine. For me, rosé is year-round, but for anybody just kind of getting new into it, rosé tends to be, yeah, spring right on through fall because you have it cold and people want something colder. Sometimes red wines, especially in the heat of summer, are a little tougher going down. Even at a lot of wine events, they'll generally focus more on whites and rosés than they will on reds if it's a big outdoor tasting in warm weather.
Now, they get a bad rap of being just kind of sweet and icky and not really white, not really red, you know, all of that stuff. But I have had some amazing rosés all the way from the most dry to very sweet, in between, some with effervescence, some completely flat. It seems like rosé can be just about anything else any other wine can be.
That's the difference between any other wine, is that a Cabernet is a Cabernet is a Cabernet. Of course, unless it's a blend or has other, obviously, varietals in it. Rosé can be anything. Rosé can be made from Grenache. It can be made from Cabernet. It can be made very, very commonly from Pinot Noir. You can make rosé from any kind of these wines. And I prefer a drier one myself. Sure, there are plenty of sweeter ones, but people see it and confuse it with the great 1980s boom of White Zinfandel, which it's not White Zinfandel. It's a completely different concept. But while some of us might turn our noses up to White Zin, if it weren't for White Zin, you know, that really helped create the wine boom of what we're experiencing now.
What are the things about rosé, as you said, because it can be very dry, sweet, in between, it also has the color shift, too. I mean, it can be incredibly pale, almost to the white. And it can be almost red, but it isn't.
It's all about how much time the grape is actually, the juice is on the skin. That's all that really is. And that's really just up to the winemaker and what they're going for in style. You know, I like a lot of California rosés. I like a lot of French rosés. I just picked up a couple of Willamette Valley rosés that were stunning. The thing about rosés versus this idea of old world and new world wines is it changes the playing field. They just are really great just about everywhere. It seems to be a wine that it's hard to screw up.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And that's good. And it gives you an opportunity to experience wine from California, wine from France, wine from, and then, you know, mix it up a little bit.
And the best thing about rosés is they're reasonably inexpensive. They're reasonably cheap. Okay, I'll use the word cheap. You can buy a great rosé for $9 and you can buy it from France. It's not unusual. It's just because it's still a newer market. It's still finding its footing. And there are people who are afraid of it because they think, oh, that's going to be like whites and that's going to be sweet. No, you know. The thing is, try these wines. And like anything else, the great thing about iPhones or any kind of phone you might have, take a picture of it if you had it. Keep that label. So next time you go shopping, you can buy it again or at least compare it to something else.
And I have to put in a little plug for sweet wines. Not all sweet wines are awful. You know, they're not syrup. It's just what you use them for. I mean, if you're going to drink a big glass of it, yeah, it might kind of gag you a little bit. But the idea is that you're sipping these.
Yeah, the thing about a sweet wine is I think of a dessert wine, a late harvest wine, or even a port or anything like that. Those are very specific wines that are meant to be aperitifs, that are meant to be in that style where they're, yes, they're sweet, but their body and their structure is so incredible versus something like an apricot wine or, you know, that kind
That's
of thing.
Different.
These are not in the same league, you know.
Right.
And there are some winemakers that are going to make certain wines that tend to be a little less dry. More often than not, you can look these up on either the winemaker's website or a generic website that talks about dry versus light. I've even seen some winemakers put a little scale on the back of their label or even on their website that shows how dry or how sweet they might be. And that's really helpful when you're buying wine.
One of the things I like about the rosés is you can get kind of the demi-sec, that's sort of dry, middle.
Right.
And if you add that with a little effervescence, a little bubble, it's not champagne. It's not sparkling wine completely, but it's just got a little bit of lift, and it's wonderful with some cheese and some fruit.
I prefer, when I'm drinking bubbles, I love rosé. I like a great Brut. It's a great palate cleanser, and it's refreshing as could be. And as many people know, of course, you can't really call it champagne unless it's made actually in Champagne. So we call it sparkling wine over here, although there are some places that have grandfathered that in. Just look on the label, and that's the one way you're going to see right away whether it's going to be a rosé or not if you can't actually see it in the bottle. But again, a great wine, and again, more often than not, dry. I love them. I love bubbles in general. In fact, I just got some from a winery the other day. It's made me very happy. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, excellent. One of the other things we were talking about before we turned on the microphones is getting wines from places that you might not think of buying wines. Or maybe you have heard that they might have something interesting, but you haven't quite taken the step to try it. So what are some countries and where are some regions that are coming up with good wine that we might not know about here?
Sure. You know, first thing is when you go shopping, never be afraid to ask the store clerk about alternative wines, meaning different countries, because they're always a wealth of knowledge. People who work at wine stores, beverage stores these days, they've got to know their stuff. When you look how far beer has gone, you can't just say, well, it's an ale or it's a this or it's a that. You have to know what you're talking about. So I love wines from South Africa. Incredible Cabernets, some amazing Cabernets. Uruguay, you can get some great Uruguay wines for $10, $15. The half the deal is simply finding these that have great prices. Greece is making some very nice wines as well. Portugal, I cannot say enough about Portugal wines. We've talked about them before, and you're talking about over 200 great varieties in that country. So it's a little harder to learn about, but in the end, who cares? Buy it. $10, $15, $20. I just ran into one recently that was half price. It was an incredible wine. I just stocked up on it as quick as I could. Australia's still down there. People forget about it. It had its big boom back in the, you know, in the turn of the century, and people seem to forget about it, but they're making incredible wines. They're Sauvignon Blancs and New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs.
I was going to say, New Zealand has got some really good stuff coming out,
right,
too.
Yeah. I think people have forgotten about Australia. It's like, don't. You know, there's a label called Jacob's Creek, which was one I sort of started on before I got into fine wine. I think we're buying it for $15. They're still consistently making great wine. And, of course, Chile and Argentina. These are commonly known countries, but don't be afraid when you go in the store to look for those oddball sections. Spanish wines, another one. Amazing wines come from Spain. And again, very reasonably priced.
Right. And I have to put in a plug for other than Rioja. Rioja grapes are wonderful, and Rioja is a terrific red from Spain, but there are other varietals that are as good or better.
The difference is you're not always going to know them. It's not a Cabernet. It's not a Pinot Noir. It's not a Malbec. It's that thing when you try these. And the best thing about it, when you're with some friends, and if you bought something and you loved it and you start turning them onto it, now all of a sudden you're talking, hey, I've learned about some wines. You're educating yourself. A little quick side story. My sister went to a tasting recently, and she's not what I would call an aficionado. She's just kind of followed along with my niece and I and this wine trail we've all been on. And it was a local winemaker in a different state, and she was saying it was a great dinner, and the wines were just awful because they were bringing in juice from elsewhere, and it always comes down to the winemaker. And I said, well, that whole thing shows that you're at least learning. You know, it's not to judge them and say they're bad or anything, but the idea is, okay, this is not something that works with my palate. And that's how you really start learning when you start tasting wines that aren't as appealing to you. You're maturing. You're learning.
Well, that's it. You're educating your palate.
Right. And it's that idea of not being afraid to try things.
Which I think is what we have talked about the whole time we've been having these conversations is go try it.
And everybody's got to start somewhere. I started with a wine that few of you out there might remember called Canai. It was a very cheap Italian red and a white. This was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And then, yeah, I had my period with White Zinfandel. Then you start realizing, oh, maybe I don't really like that. I want to try something different. Then I became a Cabernet freak. And since then, I've tried everything I can get my hands on. There literally is no wine I dislike.
Well, I can think of one or two.
Okay, what are those?
I'm not a big Retsina fan.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, it's... You know, the pine and the reds, it's just kind of like, it's too much for me. But there's, beyond that, I have to say I'm okay.
It's this idea, though, too, of, you know, if you try it from one region, you go to a different region. Again, I'm going to go back to Sauvignon Blanc. California Sauvignon Blanc is so completely different from what you'd find in New Zealand. Completely different style, completely different flavors. What's nice in this market, because of a couple of wine stores that have opened up recently, I'm seeing more Sauvignon Blanc on the shelves, which is great, because that's every bit right up there with rosé for me. I absolutely love Sauvignon Blanc.
And it goes with so much.
Oh, yeah. Have it with scallops one day. It'll make you crazy.
I was going to say it'll make your world.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Ray Pfister, it is always great to talk with you. You're off.
Next week
soon,
I'll be next week I'll be in Napa and Sonoma, but it'll be primarily for the Sonoma Barrel Auction. It'll be our first trip to that, and really looking forward to it.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to talking to you about that when you get back.
Cheers.
Ray Pfister is the co-creator and voice of the wine blog and podcast, Life Between the Vines. Pfister is also the owner and engineer of Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, and he's a regular Lake Effect contributor.